County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. A bit of a schedule adjustment. Paul Romero, candidate for the U.S. Senate in Oregon in the Republican primary, will join us on tomorrow's program. And that gives us another opportunity to talk to Douglas County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and get an update on a number of things. Bob, as we get started, of course, the new numbers came out just before noon from the Oregon Health Authority. Total of 3 people have died, so 2 additional cases, and a total now of 75 presumptive positive cases of COVID-19 in Oregon, and that number seems to be growing rapidly.
Yes, that number is growing very quickly. If you remember that our first case was just a few weeks ago, to be up to 75 cases shows that this is rising rapidly. But this is not unexpected. When we had our first case, we were thinking that it would rise quickly, and this is rising just about according to expectations.
Now, 1 presumptive positive case still from Douglas County, correct?
That is correct. And as in the presumptive cases at one time needed to be confirmed at the CDC is now accepting Oregon's test because they've been so accurate. So we're considering this a case.
And of course, lots of people are still being tested, which brings us to what we're talking about now. Lots of people meaning around the state. Let's talk about what happened yesterday with Douglas Public Health and a pilot testing drive-through procedure for potential COVID-19 patients in Douglas County. It happened sometime yesterday. When did this idea of doing this way begin to formulate?
Well, as people will remember, Douglas Public Health Network has been doing drive-through flu clinics for the last 3 years. We've been doing those not only to give the flu shots, which we think is important, but also to practice how we would do something like a mass vaccine campaign if a coronavirus vaccine came out, or to do a mass testing thing. So we were ready for this. And when the test became commercially available last week, we then started to plan for this drive-through testing clinic.
Now, obviously, a lot goes into doing this. Kind of set the scene and what people would have seen if they were a bystander.
So if you were a bystander, you'd have seen a line of cars. The cars then went into that driveway underneath the grandstands at the fairground. And in that there were a bunch of people directing traffic and whatever. And then they got to the testing station. At the testing station, Dr. Gray and I were suited up in full suits. It looks like right out of the movie Outbreak, with Tyvek undersuits, gowns, gloves, and then these hoods that look like they come from outer space here, where there's a personal respirator that takes in air, filters out 99.7% of the tiny particles, and then protects the person who's doing the test. In the test, people then stopped at the line. We verified they were the right person. We explained to them what we're going to do. And then we took this long Q-tip, about 6 inches long, and stuck it in 6 inches, twirl it around, pull it out, and put it in viral transport media. It then went into a cooler and then was sent to the lab.
So when you say, and I'm just visualizing my best guess at 6 inches here, that seems a tad uncomfortable.
Everybody thought it was a memorable experience and not in a good way. So on our website today, I'm actually here with one of our medical assistants. So we actually made a video to show what this looked like. And so you can, in all the gory detail, look to see what this looks like. It is distinctly uncomfortable.
So it must, in the course of doing that, you've got the flexibility to sort of change directions then, right?
Well, so change directions on which?
And once you go in the nose, I mean, you're going in and then going down, correct?
Well, we're going into the back, twirling it around, and then pulling it out. And what we're hoping to get is deep secretion. So this virus, unlike most viruses, doesn't live in the anterior nose. So it doesn't live in the basically the booger-producing part of your nose. So actually one of the things that's remarkable about this virus is there's not much runny nose with this. They have to get way back in at the beginning of the respiratory epithelium so you can get some of these viruses.
And how were these 17 folks selected?
So for the pilot thing, we worked with three clinics in town. We had their doctors identify high-risk patients. They then went through this fairly complicated process to get them enrolled, and then we saw them, and then we saw them yesterday. What we didn't want to have happen is be overloaded, as some of these other clinics have been, and it to be a failure not to get our highest risk patients.
And so obviously, as you've talked about yesterday, and as we've heard nationally, the number of tests are ramping up, but certainly it's been a kind of a struggle to get the numbers out there in terms of the demand for the tests versus the number of providers that want to test people for potential COVID-19 positives.
So we see several enormous barriers. One is this test is done locally. It's done in San Juan Capistrano. So after we collected these yesterday, they needed to be rushed to the local Quest facility. Quest then brought them to the Roseburg Airport. They were then flown to Seattle. The Seattle lab then had to do stuff to them. And then were taken back to the airport in Seattle and flown down to California, where they then were brought to San Juan Capistrano. So it's a fairly complicated situation. And also because the way we were doing it, all these things had to be done by hand. So all of the requisitions had to be done by paper. Now, one of the biggest barriers to testing is that you need to have this special Q-tip and special viral transport medium. So, you know, we use a little viral transport medium at any one time, but now as we ramp up the number of tests, there's nowhere near enough viral transport medium. Now, we are lucky in that the hospital and others have bought some viral transport media over the last few years for exactly this kind of situation. So we actually have a reasonably good supply in Douglas County. There are many other counties that are totally out of viral transport media, and so they will not be able to do any testing. So we were lucky because we had viral transport medium, and we knew how to do a drive-through.
And yeah, talk about that. When you began the flu clinics in that method 3 years ago, you talked about it really, I mean, it was for what it was stated for the flu, but there was also that idea out there that at some point, this might be needed for a bigger, more important purpose, if you will, or more intense purpose, intense situation. Do you feel like doing that for 3 years paid off in terms of being ready for yesterday?
Absolutely. So, you know, we've had a great team, and that desire to do the drive-through flu clinics was a joint decision of a bunch of epidemiologists and other public health people who recognized that we might need this. So we've done, you know, we did flu clinics in each of these years. Every time we do, we learn something. And sometimes it's so simple as where should we have people stop? Or yesterday it was, well, you have to remember when people stop, they're nervous about this. They have to tell them to put it in park and put on the parking brake before we start, because otherwise people might get nervous and hit reverse and hurt someone. So it's all little things like that. So there's maybe 1,000 little details that we've learned over the last 3 years that paid off mightily yesterday. So it was about as smooth as you could expect.
I would imagine, too, going into that area underneath the grandstands was also to provide more privacy, et cetera.
So we had a lot of privacy for people. The other thing is we had heaters, so it was warmer. The other thing we had is we had a bathroom there, because after you get out of this garb, you have to take a shower. So we had a shower there. We had all the stuff there. And it was just a perfect place to do it.
So I was looking at the information from Douglas Public Health that came out yesterday, and it talked about these high-tech masks and what you have to do to do this. Was the idea then that you're all suited up, if you will, and then between you and Dr. Jason Gray, you could take care of 17 folks versus, in some cases, if a provider had access to this type of gear, a lot of work on both sides of the process.
Right. So the other thing it would do is ruin, it would ruin a set of protective equipment. So the protective equipment you need is you need to have a high value mask, you need to have gowns and all that stuff. So most of the stuff that people use in the clinics and the hospitals is disposable, which is fine. But once you use it, it's disposable. These masks are, they're power. They have a lens on them and whatever. And so they can be used for an entire shift. And so you could do as many as you could do in a shift using one disposable piece on this respirator. And so it provides great protection for the person. So many times better than the best mask you have. And we only use one piece of disposable equipment per swabber.
Now, were you able to share information about how this went with the Oregon Health Authority or others in terms of providing maybe a vehicle for other counties to look at what you did?
So we've shared this with many people. You're like 12th on the call list today. So we've shared it with a lot.
And I imagine as this evolves, it's something that, for all the reasons you've just said, would be very beneficial in an even larger area, as it certainly was shown to be beneficial here yesterday.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, we think what's probably going to have to happen is that each city of any reasonable size is going to have to do this on their own. Probably would not work in a very small town because it does take a lot of people to get it going. But, you know, we would think that at some point you'll probably have testing centers in Eugene, Roseburg, Grants Pass, and Medford.
So how long did it take start to finish for this whole process yesterday for what you did at the fairgrounds?
Well, so we started planning this 2 weeks ago, but for yesterday, people started coming in at 3:30 and we were done just a few minutes after 4:30. So about 3 or 4 minutes per patient.
So for each individual person, then their time there was fairly short other than waiting in line.
Right. So people waited in line, but they were waiting in the comfort of their cars. Their time in going through was about 3 or 4 minutes. We'd like to get that down to 2 or 3 minutes. And we think there are some ways to do this by better handling or whatever. So, for example, we had to write some stuff yesterday. And in these bulky suits, it was really hard to write. So we may get somebody else to help us with stuff that we didn't need to do. We, you know, the hope is to get it down to 2 or 3 minutes, but still 3 or 4 minutes is pretty darn good.
And well, and obviously, as a lot of people see their primary care provider or at urgent care facilities, a lot of folks now, because of the patient time being of the essence, have gotten to that method of having a scribe, if you will, to do everything the doctor might previously have done, and the doctor can focus on the actual test or procedure or whatever.
Yeah, that's what we hope to do, although in this case, we had a hot zone, which was an area which was potentially infectious. We didn't want anybody else in there. So we'll figure it out. Each time we get a little bit better.
All right, more when we come back. We'll take a quick break and then come back with Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, Douglas County Public Health Officer, talking about the testing yesterday and also the COVID-19 situation in Douglas County and in Oregon. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1248 on Inside Douglas County from News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, the Commissioner of Dirt at 4 o'clock, and on tomorrow's program, Paul Romero, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, the seat currently held by Jeff Merkley. He is in the primary race against several competitors. He'll join us in studio tomorrow. Well, Douglas County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is with us now talking about the testing yesterday. One of the questions that I thought about during the break we didn't get to earlier is you talked about the test going to Seattle and then down to California. How long does it take for the providers to get the results that they can share with their patients?
So we're told that you get results in 2 to 4 days, and we think that's going to be good. We actually did one test patient last week, and we got the results back in that time frame.
And is that pretty much the norm in other places around Oregon, just based on the processing length of time it takes?
So there's two kinds of tests. The one kind of test, which is the CDC test, which is done in the state lab. We're typically getting results on that same day. This one, because it has to go so far away, they're promising 2 to 4 days.
So for the current situation, again, we mentioned at the beginning of the interview, now 75 presumptive positive cases of COVID-19 in Oregon, two additional deaths announced just in the past hour or so that have happened in the past few days. And one presumptive positive case of COVID-19 here in Douglas County. We talked about this tomorrow, but I know, or we talked about this yesterday, but I know sometimes people are still trying to wrap their heads around why this is such a bigger deal than some of the other outbreaks. You described the differences in the viruses yesterday But I'm curious, in previous cases, I don't remember which one was which year, which, what they were called, but we saw a much higher death toll. Do you feel like more action should have been taken with some of those pandemics?
Well, so, you know, one of the things we've asked people to do is not to criticize people who are working for the good. And so I'm not going to criticize anyone. I think in the past pandemics, I mean, the last real pandemic was in 1918, and none of us were around then. There was a bit of a pandemic around 2009 when there was a very early and very unusual flu that came around. Turned out that flu was not particularly deadly, a death rate about 1 in 1,000. And so I think the approach at that time was reasonably good. You know, we were able to get a test within a few weeks. We were able to get a vaccine in a few months. And so I think we handled that well. This one will be different. This test is going to be harder to get going, and the vaccine is going to be a much longer time to get it there. So this one also much more contagious than the flu and much more deadly. So as I said to other people, when we are flu nerds, so we're totally into the flu and trying to track down the flu. But when we look at the number of flu cases in any area, you start in October and November, they go up slowly. You start having a lot of cases in January and February, and then they sort of go away by March or April. But the time to rise eightfold is 14 weeks. It's forever, it seems. This one, in 14 days, it went up eightfold. And it's gone up another, you know, it's doubled again. And so it's really, this is really fast. The other problem with this is the flu has a death rate, which is kind of even among age groups, a little bit more in the elder, a little bit more in pregnant people. But, you know, it affects all. And this one, it doesn't really affect kids very much, but it really affects seniors. And those seniors, if they get this, have a high rate of hospitalization, a high rate of the need for the ICU, and a high death rate.
And as we've...
The concern that I have is that we have a lot of people get it at once, right? So the hospital typically any one time has 5 or 10 people with flu in the wintertime, and they're used to that. If we get 100 people with this, the hospital is going to be overwhelmed, and that is the biggest concern.
And as we've seen around the state, even today, some of the various facilities have been making clinics ready to move to working on just the COVID-19 situation and delaying other things, elective surgeries or procedures, things like that.
Well, they're doing that for a couple of reasons. One is to make space. The other one is to preserve equipment, right? So one of the big issues we're going to see in the next month is that when places run out of stuff like viral transport media, gloves, and masks, we're going to be really in a tough time. So I think hospitals and other clinics have made the prudent suggestion to do away with some of the elective stuff so as to preserve that equipment for the future. Much of that equipment is made in China. China is now kind of on lockdown, so they're not making much of it. And much of this stuff, which is required, is going to stay in China. So I see in the next month that equipment shortages are really going to become pretty much the big issue.
And it seems like trying to forecast how long we're going to be dealing with this is very hard as well. Obviously, a number of actions have been taking place in the past week or so, and the moves to including social distancing, which is a term many people hadn't even heard until 2 weeks ago. Things like that, closing of bars, restaurants, and things other than takeout. I mean, we've made a lot of changes in American life in just a matter of a few days.
Yes. I mean, think of just a week ago, if we'd had this conference, I would have told you, sorry, where the train is. I would tell you that March Madness was on, the Blazers games was on. There were no closing, and the schools were open. And in just a week now, all of that is closed. Schools are closed till the end of April, and the market has crashed because I think people are very aware that this could have incredible disruptions to their life. The good news is we'll get through this. And to get through this, we need to work together. We need to be thoughtful about our planning. We need not to waste equipment now that we'll need later. And we need especially for people not to send rumors, because that'll just make people panic more. You know, I'm well aware of all of these things. I'm not panicked at all. I'm just forcefully and absolutely focused on getting us through this.
And you've been working many hours every day, but you've got a lot of people behind you that maybe don't get as much attention that have been very involved in behind the scenes too.
And actually, that's my one regret, is that they don't get the credit that they deserve. So the people at the Public Health Department, the people at DPHN, the people at the county, All of those people have done incredibly good. I feel like I'm the guy at the Oscars thanking everybody back from childhood. But there are so many people to thank for this. When we ask for people, they just do it.
And
we didn't have to cajole the sheriff's office. We didn't have to cajole the fairgrounds. We just did it, and that's been great.
About a minute left with Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. How does it feel to be in the midst of this and see the suffering and hear the stories from other places and in the U.S. and now three deaths in Oregon?
Yeah, so what I told people a month ago was this will be one of those events that marks your life. So in my life, it was man landing on the moon, 9/11, and the Umpqua shooting. And I predicted a month ago that this 2019 would be one of this COVID-19 would be one of those same things for many people in the United States.
And you mentioned that things are going on on the Douglas Public Health site, and also things being put up on the county site for people to check out as well.
Right, and we're going to do another Facebook Live event tonight. So if you go on Facebook, DPHN, 6 o'clock tonight.
All right, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for another update.
All right, thank you.
1257 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.